Hey, listeners, and welcome to the Shrimp Tank Podcast. Welcome to this week's episode. As always, we're coming to you from the BRS Consulting Studios here in Little Rock. I'm your host, Rich Jensen, along with my co-host, David Sims. If it's your first time joining us on the podcast, let me take a minute to tell you what's in store. The Shrimp Tank's really your weekly crash course in entrepreneurship. As entrepreneurs ourselves, we know how challenging it can be to start, run, and grow a business. And that's why we host guests from our community who've built successful businesses already. We learn the ways they've succeeded and what lessons they've learned from failure. And ultimately, we want to find out whether our guests will swim or sink in the tank. Hey, David, I saw an interesting quote the other day talking about successes and failures, and I can't remember who it was, so I can't attribute it to who it's supposed to be, but my apologies to whoever said it. But he said, success is just a series of failures well managed.
Oh, I think I said that.
That's why it slipped my mind. I thought it was someone brilliant.
That is a good quote, though, isn't it? I mean, I'm brilliant. I didn't realize how brilliant I was.
Well, Mr. Brilliant, go dropping your daughter off at college.
That's right. That's what I did this weekend. Man, I spent the whole weekend doing honey-dos and daddy-dos and getting our daughter out to her freshman year up at the great UA up in Fayetteville.
Any trepidations there on mama's part or on
Yeah, mom got really, really emotional over the weekend. I was wondering what was going on.
It's your last daughter.
I'm like, happy, man. She's happy. I'm happy. Let's go, baby. And football season's coming. I get to co see her over some football games, you know? Yeah, no, she did. And it was so funny. We were there dropping her off yesterday. And my wife, Tamara, says she sees this mom saying goodbye to her son, and she sees him looking, and then all of a sudden she grabs him and holds him and holds on to him and starts crying, and then Tamara walking away back crying, you know?
I cried all the way to Rudy, Arkansas whenever I dropped my daughter off there. I absolutely did. And every time I would go and leave for the first five or six times, I cried all the way to Rudy.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, it's just so
funny. That voice you just heard is Dr. Amy Hester. So, David, why don't you go ahead and introduce Amy?
She is so busy that we've been having to just track her down and put it's an exciting show. I was working on the script on the drive back.
I can tell you're excited because you're interrupting yourself.
We're going to have at least two shows, maybe 10. I don't know, with as much as she's got knocked up in there ahead or however. Well, Amy Hester is a PhD and RN. She's a co-founder and chief scientific officer of HD Nursing, located in Benton, Arkansas, just a bit southwest from us here in the Arkansas Shrimp Tank Studio. She also serves as the director of nursing research and innovation and clinical informatics and information for the UA Medical Center in Little Rock. But I just learned before we got on the show that she actually retired from UAMS after 26 years on June 30th. So that's why she's been so busy. We're going to talk a little bit about that later. She holds a PhD in nursing, like I said. She's a frequent speaker and a subject matter expert in falls management across the continuum of care in the healthcare industry. Formed in 2012 as an Arkansas limited liability company, Amy and her co-founder, Dees Davis, started HD Nursing. It's a total falls management solution company dedicated to improving falls and injury management across the continuum of care, like I said, providing the research and evidence-based clinical tools necessary for managing and assessing those risks. While she was a nurse at UAMS, Dr. Hester and Dees Davis, her partner, recognized a need for a better way to assess and manage the risk of falls in healthcare settings. This led to 4 years of research and trials at UAMS and the eventual development of the trademarked Hester Davis Scale for Fall Risk Assessment and the HD Falls Program. Told you we had a lot here to cover.
Yeah.
Since 2010, the HD Falls Program has succeeded by saving organizations, staff time, and dollars while also helping patients live better. It was implemented at UAMS and within 12 months saved UAMS $1.27 million.
Okay, so my question is, can you come in here and save us that much money too?
If you have a problem with falls, I can definitely do that.
We saw some nice falls when we were in Hawaii. Yeah. That's about all I know about.
That's right. Well, anyway, we're excited to have you on the show, Dr. Hester. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
It's great to have you.
So let's jump right in with some icebreakers. HD Nursing is a relatively recent startup. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, 2012, so 6 years now. So, it takes 5 years to be an overnight success.
That's right.
We're we're down the road a little bit.
Yeah. So you, a little bit longer than I thought. So, and HD stands for Hester Davis. Is that right?
You know, that's funny that you asked that. It actually doesn't stand for anything.
Oh.
But Deez and I really, that was one of the things we really struggled with was, what do you name your company? What do you call yourself? And if you think back to 2012, HD, high definition, all of that was really just now coming out.
Oh,
it was
cool.
The buzzword. We had the Hester Davis scale, which was the HDS. We wanted to seize on that HD sort of pun, but...
Uh-huh.
So that was what came out of our brainstorming session with a lot of cosmopolitans. And
didn't mean you're like, I thought it might, or I thought it might have been the hot dogs of Falls Management or something.
Maybe. It could be that. And we've considered rebranding within the last year and a half, 2 years, but it's become such a staple of a name that's associated with Falls Management that hospitals recognize that we hesitate to get away from that now. So
that's right. You've got some brand awareness. Why get rid of it?
Right. Exactly.
I noticed the Bank of the Ozarks is now Bank OZK, and that took me a while to really figure out what was going on there. I thought they spelled it wrong.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, man, the guy who did their sign messed up.
That's funny. That's funny.
So, Amy, tell us a little bit about the HD nursing story and, you know, kind of the background, how it got started and
yeah, so, where it's come. You told a pretty good story about just recognizing the need for better falls management in the hospital setting, and Deez and I had recognized that pretty early on back in 2008.
And did you guys work together at UAMS at the time?
We did. So I was the manager of the neuroservice line, and she was an advanced practice partner there. And so together, we were administratively responsible for the outcomes in our patients in that service line. And so traditionally, patients with neurodiagnoses, whether they're brain tumors or strokes or things of that nature, by population, they traditionally have the highest rates of falls and injury in the hospital setting. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty well known by then. But even knowing that, it wasn't an excuse that Deez and I were ready to sit on.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, it was bad enough that our patient had, you know, this catastrophic stroke, or they've been diagnosed with a brain tumor. Now they've got this fall on top of it, and they've fractured their hip, and now it's really a bad situation for them that has changed the trajectory of their ability to get better.
Mm.
And so we really wanted to figure out a better way. And when we were investigating that, we realized that there wasn't a lot of science out there for that population, and there wasn't evidence-based practice that was really established and applicable for what we were wanting to do. And I was bachelor's prepared then. I had gone back to get my master's in administration in 2008, but I certainly did not have the academic foundation to do what we eventually did, and that was really what gave me the fever for wanting to bridge to a PhD program and finish out with that. I knew that if our work was going to be taken seriously and we were going to have the academic edge to our work that we needed, I needed that educational background to support that.
So that's absolutely how you got the idea for the experience at UAMS with that, looking at falls management. You said, wow, I really need to go on and do some critical research on this at this level, focused on that.
That's right. Because we, you know, saw that there were a lot, nursing makes a lot of mistakes in how we approach quality improvement and process improvement. And part of that is we just don't know any better. You don't know what you don't know. And you think you're doing the right thing, but you may not be. And so the literature that we were searching, they were PhD prepared, they were leaders in their space, and that was exactly what we wanted to be. And so but it takes that academic background to
right.
have that. And and I had actually gone to our College of Nursing and said, this is what I want to do. And they said, well, we really don't have the expertise here to do that. And we don't know a lot of nurses that do. So early on, I had to reach out to some of the people that we were looking at that were publishing. And Jan Morse was one of those. She was used to be considered the gold standard for falls risk screening as the Morse Fall Scale. And she developed that for her dissertation in 1987 at the University of Alberta. And so I had to get the courage to reach out to her and say, thank you so much for your landmark work. It really laid the foundation for falls management and acute care, but healthcare is very different than what it was back in 1987. You know, our patients that we take care of today, a lot of them didn't even make it back in 1987 because we didn't have the technology to support them. So the acuity of what we deal with is very different. And
I have to sidetrack here for a second. You know, David has his PhD, and the name of his dissertation is so long. What was the name of your dissertation?
towards development of a fall injury prediction model.
Oh, that's nice and simple. David, you could learn
you
a lot.
You have a subtitle, though, don't you?
I do not have a subtitle.
Oh, come Mine on. Was pretty,
but my dissertation was actually a failure. I didn't come out with a model. Predictive analytics is where I really swim and really I love that space. And wow. We developed a really good prediction model for determining who's at risk for falling, but I wanted to take it a step further and determine who's at risk to injure themselves if they fall, because mm-hmm. that's really where the rubber meets the road, right? And so we took some steps towards that, but we didn't come out with an actual model that was just the silver bullet for injury prediction. Mm. And that still hasn't been done yet. We're still working on that. So.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Yeah. So it's very empirically based PhD then.
I'm a very quantitative person. Uh-huh. Nurses are traditionally very qualitative people, touchy-feely, but I love the data. Give me a giant Excel database with big data. I love big data. That's cool.
So when did you and Deese Davis realize that you needed to launch a startup? What was that conversation like?
So, yeah, we didn't realize that. Back up a little bit. So after we had developed a lot of our clinical content, we knew that we had some of it had the potential to be intellectual property. We wanted to make sure that was protected. We had no plans at that point of selling it. We were just planning on, nurses are altruistic. We love to give everything away. We like unicorns and rainbows.
Right.
So we went to the Copyright and Patent Committee just to share with them what we had done, our results, how much we had saved in that first year. And we got a ton of excitement, especially from the physician members of that committee. And we were really, really surprised by that. Hmm. And so, of course, UAMS BioVentures had a representative on that committee. It was the then director, Dr. Michael Douglas, and he was just, you have to form a company. You've got to use that as a vehicle to take this to market. This is really good stuff. This knee really needs to be commercialized. Hmm. And we had no business acumen.
So somebody else gave you the idea.
100%. They were really pushing us out of the
Did
nest.
Did they fund it too?
Well, that was interesting too. So we were really, a business, like we have time for that. You know, we're 60-hour a week jobs at UAMS. Mm-hmm. We're really busy. Where is that going to fit into everything?
Right.
And, but the reality of it was, if we wanted to be taken seriously, if we wanted our science to touch as many lives as possible, if we wanted it to be deployed correctly and have some control of that, forming a business and using it as a vehicle to manage all of that was really what was necessary. And Michael Douglas called me at 10:30 at night, and I knew it was him. I picked up the phone. And I was like, oh, my God, I've screwed up something with my conflict of interest. I'm about to get fired. This is awful. I was really nervous of conflict of interest in those days. And he said, Amy, I think I know how to get through to you. And I was like, well, okay. And he said, hospitals aren't going to license your content because it saves lives. They're going to license it because it saves them money.
Saves mm-hmm. money. Wow.
And so it is – I don't mean to be crass, but it part of it is about the money. It's not just about the lives that you're going to save.
Right.
And money's important in healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that – for some reason, somehow, he was right. That connected with me. And so it took BioVentures about a little over 6 months after we went to Copyright and Patent to convince us that a company was the way to go. And so we formed the company in April of 2012. And it was the first nurse-started company at UAMS. It was really the first time that women entrepreneurs had come together and started a company. And we really lived and died by copyrights. We weren't a big, expensive therapeutic patent, so it wasn't costing the university a lot of money to protect our intellectual property. And so because of that, they really didn't think that the university needed to have equity in the company because we weren't expensive and all of that. So we actually formed a company, licensed with the university to get an exclusive perpetual right to all of the work that we had developed. And we came away from that without the university having any equity in our company. And we were the only, first and only BioVentures company that ever came through that way.
Wow.
And then on the back end, we learned that part of it was because some of the members of the committee really never thought we would go anywhere. And so I just learned that. I just learned that last summer. And one of them walked up to me and he said, Amy, I'm so proud of you. I have to be honest with you. I never thought you guys would go anywhere. And I thought, wow, how do you take that? I was like, great, thanks for letting me know that, you know, and I guess I'm glad I didn't know that back then, because I was intimidated enough with the whole process and everything that was going on than to have doubt. Because sure. I never perceived that from anyone around me. We never got anything but really positive support and fostering and mentorship from the people that, you know, we surrounded ourselves with. So
it's like an unconscious bias against nursing or something like that, you know,
or women, or just in general, they're, you know, it's not a big therapeutic drug patent. It's not something that people, they necessarily understand, but we knew it was a real pain point for healthcare. So, yeah.
Fascinating.
We've kind of started tiptoeing into the next segment, so I'll introduce it. We call it our business critical thinking section of the show. And so just kind of getting more into the business end, you've alluded to it, but when you and Dee decided to launch the company, what was the first thing that you guys did? You've talked about, you know, intellectual property. What are we going to do with this? But what was like, okay, we're going to do this. Now, where does the rubber meet the road? What's the first thing we need to do?
The first thing that we needed to do was figure out, could we get the same results outside of UAMS?
And why would that have been an issue or a thought?
Because UAMS is a big academic medical center. Dee's and I are rooted there. We had a longstanding reputation there. We had control of whether or not the nurses that were implementing the program on a day-to-day basis were compliant with that. If they weren't, we had administrative say-so of, hey, you're not meeting the standard of care. You better whip it up. You know, this is what we expect.
It was the issue of being able to control the process somewhere else.
So how do you deploy that?
Yeah.
You know, and how do you deploy it out in a different electronic medical record that is somewhere, and how do you do that in a, somewhere that's not a research-oriented firm?
Wow.
Right.
Yeah, it's almost like it's really a great point, because it's a, from the get-go, and I've seen this happen with many, many companies and startups, is the failure to test your assumption of what's going to become your business model. You know, it sounds like you're saying, hey, it worked great at UAMS. Oh, it worked great everywhere. Well, wrong. Don't assume that.
We didn't assume that. And we, the other thing that we needed was that sort of a different looking partner that also had different patients. You know, we're a big tertiary care medical center, level one trauma center. We get the worst of the worst, kind of all roads lead to Mecca.
Right.
But we don't have everything. We don't have rehab. We didn't have geriatric psychiatry. How are we going to perform in those populations too that we couldn't test at UAMS? So it was also, how do you perform in a different setting that takes care of different populations of patients that we may not be exposed to at UAMS?
Yeah. So if you could give our listeners one piece of startup advice in the healthcare space, based upon your experience now since 2008, roughly, when you started thinking about this and you're going, what would that be, do you think?
So I think it's kind of that general rule of, in healthcare, we read a lot of literature and you look at results of something and you think, well, how generalizable is that, right? Uh-huh. They did it there and they had this finding here, but what does it mean for the rest of the world? And that's really what you need to figure out, is you can do things in a small scale or you can create this widget that seems to work really good in this particular space, but what does that mean for the big world? Mm-hmm. And can you replicate that? Can you control that? Can you sustain that? And that is a part of, you know, some of our tagline within HD Nursing is predict, prevent, sustain. And the sustainability part is a huge piece of what we do. It's not just about helping people get better. It's about helping them get better and stay better and continue to get better over time. Mm-hmm. Anybody can focus on something for a minute and ramp it up and make it look better for a minute. But how do you keep that going when you have other priorities in your organization? Replicability is really important, and making sure that, to your point, the assumptions that you've made that are key value propositions for your entity are also true outside of your own space.
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let me ask you this, and it sounds like you might not have needed to raise much capital, but talk a little bit about raising capital as a startup, if you needed to do it, or what was your plan if you did and then not do. And then I know David wanted to touch on sales and marketing. How did you go about actually getting the word out? So start first with the capital issue.
So capital was an interesting journey. I bootstrapped everything for the first 2 years, and I did that personally. I personally bootstrapped that. And we did that intentionally so that there wouldn't ever be any question on the back end of how much did Amy put in, how much did Dee's put in, any of that kind of stuff. We were very clean about that from the very beginning, and that was important. I'll say that one of the mistakes that we made going in when it came to capital and the thoughts about that is Dee's and I weren't really thinking about that. We hadn't had that mentoring yet about raising money or anything like that. And so when we started the LLC, we were 50-50 in the LLC. We didn't leave any to the side for raising funds or bringing somebody in on equity or any of that sort of stuff. So we had to, it wasn't that it was a hard renegotiation between Dee's and I because we're very close friends and we remain close friends today, but that's not always true with groups that come together to start a business and they don't always have that love relationship. And so when you're starting out, you have to leave a little bit to the side of treasury to make sure that you can bring that capital in if you're going to need it. We didn't have a lot. We didn't need bricks and mortar in the beginning. We didn't need any of that stuff. So we were really, it was just us, and it was us figuring out how to deploy that and how do you do it virtually? How do you have to travel to do this, or can you do it virtually? And that was another reason to, you know, try in another space. And so...
So if I can just recap, basically one of the things you're saying is either have an agreement up front if you're each going to be 50-50 of how much you're each going to give up of equity or ownership for future, or set aside some treasury stock or treasury shares for future incentives, growth, investors, et cetera.
That's exactly right. Okay. And the other thing that's important is you have to be honest to that process. When Dee's and I started renegotiating around the equity, it really was a conversation of being completely transparent about the percent of effort that had been put in to get you there. Mm-hmm. And when you're all sitting at a table, you know, there's four of us in the room right now. It's easy for us to start out with a 25% split for everybody because that's what's comfortable. That, you know, it's non-confrontational. But, you know, 25% of nothing is easy. But when you get down the road and you have some value, 25% of something can be a lot. And it can create some ill feelings if that person hadn't earned that 25% along the way.
Yeah.
And so it's really important to be completely transparent in those discussions and negotiations up front. And I think it's a test of your emotional intelligence of the group a little bit to some degree and whether or not you're able to handle those discussions. And if you can't handle those discussions then when you're not worth anything, well, you're really not going to be able to do it when you're worth something. So you might as well get that out of the way.
That's right. It gets awful ugly then, you know. That's true.
You want to talk about the sales and marketing, Dave?
Oh, yeah. So, what have you learned about sales and marketing and that function now that you guys are you're seasoned, mature company, and now I saw on your website you have a guy there hired who's the VP of sales and marketing. So what have you learned about marketing this program to hospitals?
Yeah, so we just within the last couple of months have hired a VP of sales and marketing. He's based out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Really good guy, has been in that space for a very long time. We really used our network of connections early on when it came to sales and marketing. And we, it was an interesting evolution when we had protected all of the intellectual property for everything. And there are different components of our intellectual property. And the foundational component is the Hester-Davis scale. That's how we assess who's at risk to fall. And so UAMS was going through a transition, moving from an Allscripts electronic medical record to Epic. And Epic is the market leader. It's about 65% of the market share for EMRs. And so we had validated our model within the Allscripts EMR platform and on paper. So we were the first predictive model in healthcare to ever validate both on paper and in an EMR. And so from an informatics perspective, that was important to me because when you translate something from paper into a computer, you don't know how a clinician's going to use it. You don't know if it's going to have the same outcome. And we wanted to make sure that we hadn't lost any nuances of the predictive ability of our tool. So Epic found that out and actually brought Carl Dvorak, their VP, down here to meet with us. And Epic wanted to license our entire program for falls management. We knew that, of course, you would be giving away all the groceries, but we also knew that when you've seen one hospital, you've seen one hospital. We had learned that, and there was some customization of the content that had to happen. So we licensed the HDS component of what we do, the foundation of our models, to Epic for next to nothing, but it was the good housekeeping seal of approval. So it It was amazing because, oh, Epic's your client? Mm-hmm. Wow, how did that ever happen? Mm-hmm. And if Epic says it's good enough, then it's good enough. Mm-hmm. And so it actually was a great catalyst for Epic users to say, okay, we have the peanut butter, but we also want the jelly. So right. If you want the jelly, you're going to have to come to HD Nursing and license that. And so
it's fascinating your story how on the sales and marketing side, the technological aspect of it was critical to your business model.
Absolutely. And the validation of it, the validity of what we had done.
Yeah.
And so we haven't ever had a single salesman up until just recently. And we just signed an exclusive co-marketing agreement with a multi-billion dollar company. I can't tell you who that is just yet. The contract is signed, but the press release isn't out yet.
Okay.
And so we go to their mid-year sales meeting.
Fifth question.
Thanks for giving us that softball for Plead the Fifth. That's fantastic.
Yeah, their mid-year sales meeting is next week, and they have 125 salesmen based across the country. So that's a nice launch pad for...
So you guys don't even have to worry about managing that sales force. It's already there for you. It's kind of packaged.
Well, right? It's there for you, but Jesse's going to have his hands busy as our VP of Sales and Marketing, herding all those butterflies. Yeah. And so,
fascinating.
Hey, you're listening to the Arkansas Shrimp Tank coming to you live every Tuesday morning. I'm your host, Rich Jensen, with my co-host, David Sims. You can always catch a replay of the podcast at arkansas.shrimptankpodcast.com, or you can subscribe to download our podcast on iTunes so you won't miss a single episode. You can also watch all of our 5-minute post-show wrap-up videos on our YouTube channel. For the sake of time, David, I think we're going to have to skip the shrimp cocktail section, but we definitely need to have Amy back on and do a second show.
So can't script that. This is too good, man. I spent too much time developing.
We'll do them in the second show. All right, I'll let you ask one question. Pick your very favorite shrimp cocktail.
Amy,
is just kind of little ones. Quick hitters kind of things.
Yeah, okay. So here, it's that simple. So what is HD Nursing's number one jumbo shrimp success story? And what lessons can hospital executives and administrators take away from that story?
Our jumbo shrimp, we have two jumbo shrimp.
Okay. You're permitted to.
SSM Healthcare.
SSM?
Uh-huh. And they are a 19 hospital system across 4 states. But I will say our jumbo shrimp is Kaiser Permanente.
Kaiser
is a very large system with 5 regions. So
aren't they big like out in California?
Yeah.
It seems like you see Kaiser everywhere.
So their Southern Cal region is one of our clients. We're deploying there currently. I'll say the biggest thing learning is that with big systems like that or big shrimp, everything you know about the sales cycle, throw it out the window. Mm. If you want to land those big shrimp, you just have to be patient.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So our sales cycle with Kaiser was 2 years.
Okay. Wow. 2-year sales cycle.
Fascinating. Well, we're ready for the Plead the Fifth.
Yeah, we are here.
Yeah, Rich was anxious to get on that.
All right.
Since you gave him that softball.
Yeah, there's a guaranteed point.
That's right.
So the way this works, Amy, is if you listen to the other podcast, so you know what it's all about. We're going to try and ask an embarrassing or a question you can't answer, so we get a point. If you answer, you get the point.
Okay.
We always say that if we win, it's dinner's on you at Arthur's, and if we win, it's lunch at Chick-fil-A on us.
Oh, or I could take you to Mount Fuji.
That's
my mother-in-law's restaurant. So if you like sushi,
cool,
I can take you there.
Yeah. There you go.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
All right. So should we jump in there with the one? Yeah. What's the name of the company that's going to announce next week?
Have to Plead the Fifth. That's a cheap shot.
One point for us right there. It might be the only one we get. Okay.
All right.
Here's a real one. What's the most frustrating thing about being chief scientific officer for HD Nursing?
Data collection for over 100 hospitals is really difficult because they all send you data in their own way. And so actually tomorrow I'll start working with the EIT college at UALR to do some internships to see if they can help us with that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Man, and they all send you data in different formats.
Everything's a different format, and some get down to the unit level. Some it's monthly data, some it's quarterly data, some it's annual data. And so for me as a data scientist, you want your data a certain way and just the right way. And, you know, just sometimes it's like pulling teeth to get it.
All right. So for all the for all the stuff you have up there and all the experience and
he pointed degrees at his head, and everything by the else way, for those who
up in your gray matter. That's right. What salary do you think you really deserve or should be paid at this stage of the company?
I think I'm there. I'm close to $300,000 in my salary now. I think that's commensurate with somebody with my level of training and experience. I have a lot of equity in my company, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. I'm surrounded by people that I have fun with every day. Mm. I look forward to going to work every day, so I'm pretty happy.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah. Good answer. That's good.
All right. So what's the ROI for investors in HD Learning? Well, actually, it didn't take much capital.
We actually do have two investors. We did a Series A round. We got a tax credit from AEDC, which was good. And so we do have two investors. They're both California-based.
Okay. We know Danny Games and Brian Scoggins. We had them on this. Did you work with them when you were down there?
No, did not. They were all – no, we didn't. Steve Staley.
Okay.
And Mike Smith with Innovate Arkansas really pushed that along for us. So that was a big deal for us, getting that tax credit. And AEDC is an amazing asset for the state. So I've already forgot your question, Tony.
What was the ROI? You were talking about the A-shares.
So the ROI is right now our investors are at a 6X based on our current valuation. So, and we're growing. So that's their ROI right now.
Very good.
Yeah.
Fantastic. What's
David, why didn't we have her before she, you know?
I know. Hey, we should have changed this segment to, okay, if we win, we get a point.
We get a point in the company.
if you win, you get a point in our company.
If we'd had her on 15 years ago, we could be one of those investors getting 6X.
That's exactly right.
That's right. Okay, let's see. What is HD Learning's weakest barrier to entry that a competitor could profitably exploit? We also look for business opportunities on this show.
And remember, you can plead the fifth.
It's a long pause.
Right now we don't necessarily have a competitor in the market that competes with what we do because we're very niche. We focus on a single outcome today. But I guess they could give it to hospitals for free.
But they'd have to develop all this.
All right.
It takes years.
No competitor, 6X. Is there any opportunities to invest right now?
We had seed investors. We opened up a Series A round, and we were looking for about $2 million there, and that's when we landed SSM.
Okay.
And so and we knew Kaiser was in the pipeline, and so we closed that knowing that we were self-sufficient. There was really no reason to give that equity away at that point, and so we've never had to do that. So it's been for me, knowing what I know now about startups and how things normally happen, it's really a Cinderella story in my mind. So that is not lost on me, and I certainly don't take it for granted.
All right, here's my last shot at getting us a point, David. What's the worst thing about working with Gary Platzman as HD Nursing's president and CEO?
He's a Patriots fan.
That was too easy.
That was very easy. I'm a big Broncos fan. He's a Patriots fan. And so it really drives him nuts.
We gave her softballs, and she gave us one softball during the show. So
she won 5-1, and the only one we got was the softball we got.
Sorry, all you Patriots fans out there, but I'm a Broncos girl.
Normally, I'd say you fared pretty well, but I think you creamed us.
We got smoked. Hey, so our sponsor, BRS Consulting, Amy, refers to themselves as rehirement, not retirement advisors. And before we got on the show, we talked about that a little bit. And I was fascinated to learn that on June 30th of this year, you retired from UAMS. So you're really in your rehirement phase. At what age now? You're
38? I'm 46.
46. So talk to us about what your vision is for this rehirement phase, this first rehirement phase.
Yeah, so my vision is that we put me as a hamster on the wheel to really churn and burn the science of what we're doing and do whatever we need to do to make the company work, right? Mm-hmm. So we're really scaling up. We've got this new partnership. It's really about to get super busy, right? And so, but at the other phase of that, I still maintain an adjunct faculty position in the College of Nursing at UAMS, and I'm still doing some per diem work there. And I am a clinical entrepreneur in residence for the Winrock International group for the Health Innovator that's happening, that's sponsored by the governor.
I got to plead the fifth question. Oh. When does your family ever see you?
So, you know, that's a great question. And that I will say as a word to the wise for everybody, that is the secret to my success. I have the best, most supportive spouse on the planet.
That's awesome.
And really cool kids. And so that's why I'm able to do everything that I'm able to do.
That's great. All right, real quick, tell us about your kids.
So I have three kids, 20, 18, and 16. My daughter's at UA Fayetteville. My son starts in computer science here at UALR next week. And my youngest is a junior at the big box out high school, Go Miners.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right, one final question before Rich wraps us up. Our sponsor.
You notice that's
about,
like his third or fourth final question.
Yeah, yeah. I love it. It's like you know, I used to litigate. One final question, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Sure, judge says. Yeah, sure. So the fifth principle of the comprehensive life stewardship planning process that our sponsor has is to be a generous steward and leave a lasting legacy. And you're obviously blessed and you're obviously very successful and you're going to be very, very successful through HD nursing. But what is your legacy? What do you want to leave behind?
So that's a great question. So I hope that the work that we're doing with Health Innovator now is going to set some permanent foundations here in Arkansas to help healthcare startups either fail faster or scale faster. And break down some of the barriers that Deez and I had to navigate early on when we really didn't know what we were doing. So from that perspective, my payback to sort of Arkansas startups. And then to the clinical science, I hope that the passion for nursing science, doing it in a academic way with academic stewardship and really taking the time to demonstrate the evidence before you make assumptions in clinical care, putting it out there, doing it right, and doing it in a way that's sustainable is really important. Our company slogan is "We're the science behind falls management," but internally what we say is we save lives while we sleep. So we don't have to be anywhere to touch patient lives, and that's a pretty neat thing to be able to say as a nurse scientist.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Amy, we want to thank you so much for coming on the program today. For let's say there's a listener out there, they're either in nursing, they're a hospital administrator, they're someone that's we've really piqued their interest. What's the best way for them to get a hold of HD Nursing, you, or your new VP of marketing, or whoever it is that they would contact to find out more about?
So we have info@hdnursing.com. They can reach out to that email address, and that will eventually get to me.
Okay, excellent. All right. Well, you've heard a great podcast. If you haven't watched the video, we're going to be recording the video with the wrap-up of all the best pearls that we were able to speak with Amy about. Be sure to do that. And then make sure to tune in each week. Go to arkansas.shrimptankpodcast.com to hear more insights from our guests. And also, don't forget to subscribe. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button on iTunes. And until then, stay safe. And remember, in the business world, to become a shark, we all start out as shrimp.